All right, a good night of Shabbos, everyone. Welcome back to 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, special Lag BaOmer edition. You might hear some of the noise in the background. Hopefully the fire is not just outside, but it's here inside with the shir as well. We have three ideas. Two of them are complement each other very nicely, and a different idea that's a little bit out of left field, but I hope you'll find that meaningful as well. Okay, the first idea comes from the Orach L'Chaim, which is Rav Avram Mizlotchev, who says something very beautifully. Of course, the very first pasuk in the parasha tells us, "Emor el kohanim bnei Aaron, ve'amarta lehem lenefesh lo yitama be'amav." And everyone comments on why Emor ve'amarta. Why do you have the double language of saying to the kohanim? Why do you have to say this to the kohanim at all? Why is there a special parsha dedicated solely to talking to the kohanim about these halachos of tuman tara that apply to them? But I want to share with you this really stunning idea that I saw from the Sefer Or L'Chaim, who writes the following. He writes, "Lavin Masha Amar HaKohanim B'nei Aaron." Why does it have to introduce the Kohanim as B'nei Aaron? Don't you think I would have known if you told me that they were Kohanim? I would have known that they were B'nei Aaron. It could have just said, Emor El HaKohanim. You could have just said, tell the Kohanim, and I would have known that they were the B'nei Aaron. Or, he says, it could have said the inverse, Emor El B'nei Aaron HaKohanim. Why is it first B'nei HaKohanim and then B'nei Aaron? And therefore, he says the following. He says, there are two types of people. V'nir dina yesh shnei minei b'nei adam. There are two types of people. The first type of person serves Hashem, and they're not so connected to the world around them. They're not so connected to people around them. They're more a little bit more of hermits. They stay to themselves. Ha'echad obed as Hashem b'chol levavo. Certainly, they serve Hashem properly, but umuvd al mi b'nei adam. But they are separate from everybody else. In other words, they're, because of their high spirituality, so they're moved out, they're separate from everyone else. And therefore, even though they achieve a high spiritual level themselves, but they're not connected to everyone else around them. And then he says in the next underline, v'yesh b'nei adam, and then there are other types of people. There are types of people, o'avim l'ischabir b'nei adam. They like connecting to people. Ulis knows b'neim, and they like being m'urav with people. They like being connected and amongst other people. But however, v'zer tzarech shmira gedola l'avodas Hashem yisbarach, if you are connected, if you're living in the world around you, so you need protection because you're going to be exposed to sometimes to things that are different from you. V'lo yavo chas v'shom l'idei p'nuya o chas v'shom l'aniach avodas abor yisbarach shelo nasos b'shvila maligan alav. And sometimes one or two things are going to happen. Either you're going to be so embarrassed because the whole world is doing one thing and you're doing the other thing, but you want to be friends with everybody and you want to be connected with everybody, so you don't like being different. So you're concerned about what other people think of you, and that's never a good situation to put yourself in. And so he says we have two different types of people. Type of person number one, serves Hashem, but they're okay that no one likes them. They're okay not having friends. They're okay not being connected. Person number two, they like having lots of friends. They like being connected. They like being me'uravim abrios. They like being connected with people. And therefore he says, now you understand the pasuk. And listen carefully how he reads the pasuk. It is nuanced, but it is so beautiful. He says, v'zesh amar emor el ha-kohanim. You have to go to the kohanim. Rotze lomar osam ha-ovdim hein b'nei aron. And you have to remind the kohanim that even though they're working in the Beis HaMikdash, and even though they're in the proverbial ivory tower, they are b'nei aron. And therefore, Rotze lomar shi'ev mitalmidov shel Aaron, oiv shalom, verode shalom, oiv esabrios. You have to remind them that even though they're in the ivory tower, and even though they're sitting in the Beis HaMikdash, so to speak, removed from everybody, that's not what you have to be. You have to be b'nei Aaron. You have to be oiv shalom, verode shalom, oiv esabrios. You have to be connected to people. You have to care about people. You have to bring people closer together. But what happens? Because you are a b'nei Aaron, and therefore, because you're Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, and Oev Es Abrios, and you're amongst the people, you know what else you need to do? You need to protect yourself. You need to make sure that your connection with people is not going to lead to a deterioration of your spirituality. And therefore, he says, that, now we understand, is the next part of the Pasuk. V'achar she'izir she'yeh mitalmidav shel Aaron. After you tell them that they have to be of the students of Aaron, li'schaber imam, and you have to mean connected with people, you have to also have azhara. Tzarech azhara acheret, v'zeu ve'amarta alehem. You need to warn them. And what is? L'nefesh lo yitama. That despite the fact that you live amongst people, and despite the fact that you live amongst different types of people. And that's a beautiful thing, because that's how you bring people closer to Judaism, and that's how you create warmth, and that's how you create community. It's a beautiful thing. But you also have to be careful, because not everyone's going to be the same as you. And not everyone's going to have the same influences as you. And not everyone's going to have the same exposure that you have. And therefore, says the Pasuk, because you are B'nai Aaron, because you have this mandate and imperative to be amongst the people, but you also have to be warned, Ve'amarta Alehem, L'nefesh Lo Yitama. You have to be careful about Tuma. You have to be careful about the influences that you surround yourself with. Just because you're connected to people and you want to be liked by people and you want to get invited to Shabbos meals and you want to invite to Simcha, that doesn't give you the right to give up on your Kedusha. That doesn't give you up your right to behave in a way that's antithetical to your values. And therefore, he says, that's what it means. Now let's reread the Pasuk. Emor ela Kohanim. He says, come to the Kohanim, and you have to tell them, remind them, that they are B'nai Aaron, that they can't be the types of Jews that just live in the ivory tower. And it's not enough to sequester yourself off, and it's not enough to live in a bubble. You have to be B'nai Aaron. You have to go out, and you have to influence and impact people. You have to be Oiv Shalom, V'Rodev Shalom, Oiv Esabrios, U'mekarvin L'Torah. That requires you putting yourself out there. You have to connect to people. But because you're connecting yourself to people, and because you're putting yourself out there, and sometimes in situations that aren't necessarily natural to you or aren't necessarily naturally in line with what your values are, therefore, ve'amarta aleihem, but because they are B'nai Aaron, and because they're going out, ve'amarta aleihem, you also have to tell them, l'nefesh lo yitama be'amav. They also have to protect the integrity of their Kedusha. They have to protect the integrity of who they are and what their value system is. Just because you're doing Kiruv doesn't mean that you have to behave that way. Just because you have friends that are very diverse than you doesn't mean that necessarily you have to adopt their value system. You can be Oiv Shalom, Verodev Shalom, Mekarvin L'Torah, Oris Abrios. You can be all of those and also be at the exact same time L'nefesh Lo Yitama Be'amav. And also recognize that you might be a little different and you might have a little bit of a different value system. And your level of Kedusha and your level of exposure and your level of social, it might be different than everybody else. And that's okay. And the beauty of this point is, I think what he's saying, is they're not contradictory to one another. You can both be B'nai Aaron and maintain that high level of Kedusha. Now it requires work. It requires effort. It's sometimes easier to just recoil into your own bubble or into your own corner and not expose yourself to everybody else or not have those types of friendships and relationships. Says the Rav Avram Mizlachov, that's not the approach. You have to be B'nai Aaron. You have to be Oiv Es Abrios, U'mekarvin L'Torev, and Oiv Shalom, V'Rodev Shalom. That requires you to put yourself out there. But even though you're putting yourself out there, you still have to be true to who you are. You still have to be L'nefesh Lo Yitama Be'amav. You have to make sure that despite the fact that you have that exposure, you don't give up on your Kedusha and that you don't create Chas V'Shalom Tuma as a result of that exposure. That's idea number one from the Orach L'Chaim. I think it's a very beautiful idea, a reminder to us of what our jobs are. Our jobs are to go out there. Our jobs are to influence. Our jobs are to impact, but also to stay true to who you are. Okay, that is idea number one. Idea number two comes from the other end of the spectrum altogether, of David Stav, who's a Rav in Eretz Yisrael. And he has an English article that I thought was beautiful point. Torah tells us in the middle of, the Torah is going to tell us in the middle of the Parsha about blemished animals. And if a man offers up a peace offering to Hashem, it shall be unblemished. It shall not have any defect in it. And again, later on, we know that the Torah is going to give all of the long list of blemishes. Ask Rostov the following question. Such an obvious question. The korbanos that we're talking about here, what korbanos are we talking about? We're talking about a voluntary sacrifice, korban adava, which means that I didn't have to give anything. I could have gone on and not had to have given a single korban. I made a choice. I chose to bring a korban. And now the Torah is coming along and saying, once you chose to bring the korban, don't bring a blemished korban. Why would I bring a blemished korban? In other words, I didn't have to do anything. I made the decision. I made the choice that I wanted to bring a korban. So of course, if I made that decision, it's because I wanted to. And if I wanted to, shouldn't we assume that I'm not going to bring something that's incomplete? Right? It's like such an obvious question when he portrays it that way. I never thought of it in these terms. He says, why would anyone offering a voluntary sacrifice produce an animal with a blemish? Wouldn't we logically assume that the person would bring the best available animal? After all, if he didn't want to bring a sacrifice as suitable, healthy animal, why would he have volunteered to do so in the first place? Right? I could have sat on the sidelines. No one asked me to do it. No one forced me to do it. I chose to do it. So once I chose to do it, why would we assume that you would bring a korban with a mum? Why would we assume that you would bring a korban with a blemish? So he talks about kain and hevel also. He talks about that in the next paragraph. He says this becomes even more baffling when we remember that kain offered a sacrifice to Hashem of his own volition. And Chazal tell us that it was inferior quality. Why would he have done such a thing? Right? So exactly your question, Yuri. Great. So he said, how did this happen? Or rather, why did this happen? What transpires in the soul of a person who suddenly decides to offer a subpar sacrifice? That's his question. This person is choosing voluntarily to bring a korban. He doesn't have to. No one's forcing him to. He chooses to do it. And if he's choosing to do it, why wouldn't he do it right? Why would he bring a korban that's blemished? And so he says here something that I think is psychologically spot on. He says, could the Torah be attempting to address a number of well-known human traits? The first is the feeling of intense enthusiasm that fades over time. We often see this when aliyahs are auctioned off at shul, and certain individuals are intent on showing everybody else what they're capable of or how generous they can be. But once they return home, the enthusiasm simply subsides. Or a radio host might be collecting donations and taking calls from donors, which are broadcast live. The donors get swept away and commit to donating, but their enthusiasm subsequently fizzles out. So sometimes when we have that burst of enthusiasm and energy, something sounds really good. And then as we think about it later on, we're like, oh, you know, that was nice in the moment, right? There was a lot of positive peer pressure. Goldberg was calling out names of people who donated. He was putting it on his WhatsApp status. I get caught up in the moment. But afterwards, maybe my wife got to me, maybe I had second thoughts, and some of that enthusiasm dissipates. So he writes, in other words, maintaining enthusiasm over time is no simple feat. Sometimes, things that catch fire quickly are also extinguished quickly. So we need to warn enthusiasts not to cool down too quickly. So that's idea number one, he says. Idea number one is sometimes you have these great ideas, you voluntary a korban, you bring the, and then after you realize, oh, it caused that much? Caused that much to bring a korban? I didn't realize it was $1,000. I was prepared to spend $500. So now I'm going to bring a korban that's subpar. Torah says no. Torah says you have to remember that initial enthusiasm and burst of energy you had, and you cannot let that dissipate over time. And then he continues on. This process occurs another way too. After a friend grows excited and wants to contribute a sizable donation, he might ask himself, does Hashem really care whether I bring him a fancy sacrifice or a modest one? Right? Like, does Hashem really care whether I have a nice esrog or not a nice esrog, nice lulav, not a nice lulav, the best matzah, not the best matzah, the nicest shofar? Like, Hashem doesn't care about that stuff. Hashem doesn't need the gashmias. He knows what's in my heart. So therefore, one could say that if Hashem doesn't really care, as he says, indeed, Hashem doesn't need fat or skinny animals. We human beings need our fat sacrifices. We must become accustomed to the idea that we need to assign the things we believe the highest priority and status. These types of excuses will serve to help people lighten the load of prioritizing the things they value. Any attempt to offer a meager sacrifice based on ideological grounds is merely the result of a person giving into his materialistic nature while using ideology to justify his behavior. So we justify it. We justify it. Everything else in our life is top quality. We have the best houses and the best cars and the best vacations and the best offices. We have the best in everything, with one exception. There's only one area of our life where we're okay being subpar. And that, he says, is spirituality. Because after all, we say to ourselves, does Hashem care whether it's a fat animal or skinny animal? It's getting burnt on the Mizbeach. Does Hashem really care with a nice little, not nice little? Okay, so you're every other area we expect the best, with one exception, he says. And that is our Judaism. And he says, sometimes we make rationalizations. We lighten the load, so to speak. Oh, Hashem doesn't really care. Hashem would want me to do this. But he says, every other area, we expect the best with one exception, and that's our Judaism. And therefore, he writes, the Torah cautions us, telling us that once a person decides to make a particular value paramount, he must nurture that value wholeheartedly, give it his best. If not, he might be inclined to think that going through the motions was good enough. And so the same way we expect the best from ourselves and from our children in Gashmias, in materialism, in our jobs, in our cars, in our houses, in our vacations, in the hotels, so too, he says, you have to have that same expectation of yourself in Judaism as well. There can't be anything half-baked. There can't be anything that's, oh, it's okay, Hashem will understand if I only go halfway. No. Same way you would never tolerate something half-baked in any other area of your life. Why do you tolerate that in your Judaism as well? I think is what he's saying. And then he says another very beautiful idea. He says this idea of a blemish doesn't just refer to the korban, but he says it refers to the person as well. He writes, however, another way of understanding the term tamim is that it concerns the person making the offering. Anyone who brings a korban must be tamim. He must have come to terms with his decision to bring a korban. No second thoughts and no excuses. He brings his korban wholeheartedly and not be wishy-washy about it. A person must do everything in his power to ensure that the korban he brings is an expression of his acceptance of what he has done. After deciding what he wants to do, we must charge fully ahead, fully motivated, without looking back, and keep our objective. In other words, every other area, that's what we apply. Right? Would you ever think to a meeting, I'll go a little hardcore right now, ever show up to a meeting a half hour late, 45 minutes late, an hour late? Would you ever walk into a meeting with a boss and like come, step out in the middle 15 times and take a couple phone calls in the middle? You would never expect that of yourself in any other area. It would be unheard of in the business world. And yet, we do it regularly. We come to shul. We mosey in, sometimes on time, sometimes a few minutes late. Then we pop out. Then we go grab a bite. Then we go, right? You wouldn't do that another. Somehow, from 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, we act like professionals. And then it comes to shul on Shabbos, and we revert back to like kids again. He's pointing out that this idea of blemish simply is saying that the same expectations that we have of ourselves in material pursuits is what we should have in our ruchnius as well. In the same way, you wouldn't have second thoughts, you wouldn't make excuses, you would take ownership, you would keep your objective, you would charge full ahead, you would be fully motivated, you wouldn't look back, you wouldn't accept anything half-baked in your material pursuits, so too in your spiritual pursuits as well. And that's how he understands the concept of a mum in the parsha that we're going to read about this morning. So just to review that idea, because we said a lot. He started off with the question, the reminder. I understand, why would someone who brings a voluntary korban have to be reminded not to bring a blemish? The answer is that's what sometimes people do. Sometimes people have that initial burst of good intentions. They want to do the good thing, and then they get second thoughts, and then they get wishy-washy, and then they rationalize, then they assume that Hashem accepts good enough, or then that fire, that enthusiasm that they had dissipates. And I think what he's saying is that the same expectation that you have of yourself, of ambition and of excellence and of attention to detail and of pushing ahead without looking back and expecting the best from yourself, that is what we have to have in our spiritual pursuits as well. And so even someone with the best of intentions, they bring the korban. But then when they get there, there's a blemish and they're okay with that. Why are we okay with that? We're not okay with that in any other area of our lives. You would never go to buy a car or lease a car, and the guy would bring the car to you, and you would see a big stain sitting on the front seat. And you would say to the guy, what are you doing? There's a big stain on the front seat. He goes, oh yeah, the last owner, he had an accident in the front seat, but it's okay, we scrubbed it down, don't worry about it. You would never take that car. You would never take a house like that. You walk in a house, and there's a pipe that's split. You'd say, what's going on here? Oh yeah, like the previous owners, they didn't mind that there was no hot water. They were okay with lukewarm showers, you know, so they didn't mind that the hot water. You wouldn't buy the house. You wouldn't tolerate that in any other area of your life. Says Rostov, why do we tolerate that in our Judaism as well? And therefore, the same way, when we have that burst of enthusiasm and we have those good intentions, we have to carry through on them and we can't accept anything less. The same way we don't accept anything less in other areas of our life, we shouldn't accept anything less in our Judaism as well. So idea number one was from Rav Avram Mizlatcha of the Orach L'Chaim. A beautiful reading of that first pasuk of Emor al HaKohanim B'nei Aaron. You have to remind them that they're Bnei Aaron. They have to be involved and invested with people around them, fostering relationships and caring about other people. But Ve'amarta Aleihem, because of that, they're also exposed to dangers. And therefore, they also have to be reminded, Lenefesh lo yitama be'amav, that even though they might surround themselves with people that are different than them, you also have to protect your own Kedusha. That's idea number one. Idea number two came from Rav Stav. It's a beautiful idea about the mum in the parsha that we're going to read. Why is there a mum? Why do we have to worry about a mum? This guy's bringing a voluntary korban. Now, the answer is sometimes, even when we voluntarily choose to do something, we accept, you know, half, 50%, we accept something that's not perfect. And I think what he's saying is the same way in every other area of our life. We would never accept that. We would always expect the most from ourselves. We would push ourselves. We would be ambitious. We would be motivated. We would keep to it. We would charge fully ahead. So too, that is what we have to do in our spirituality as well. That is idea number two. Idea number three comes from the Munkacher. Munkacher of. In his Sefer Divrei Yisrael, page number four. This comes back to the first pasuk in the parsha. Again, Emor al haKohanim b'nei Aaron. And again, everyone wonders, why Emor ve'amarta? Why do you need both of them? Listen to what he says. It is so beautiful. He says, V'zeshek amar, Emor el haKohanim b'nei Aaron. Tell the Kohanim that they are b'nei Aaron. That's the literal translation of it. What? You don't know they're b'nei Aaron? You find a Kohen. Go to anyone in the shul. The Kohanim know they're Kohanim. They're very proud of that, right? They wear their socks on Yontif so that everyone could see while they're doing duchening. Kohanim are not shy. You know, they joke, like, how do you know someone's a vegan? He'll tell you. Kohen's very similar. Kohen's not so far behind. With good right, right? They're going to serve in the Beit HaMikdash. They're good, right? So a Kohen, Emor el haKohanim b'nei Aaron. You have to tell them that they're b'nei Aaron. They know they're b'nei Aaron. So what do you need to tell them? So he says, right, says the Munkacher Rav, Shiyadu be'atzmam, shem b'nei Aaron. No. Sometimes you need to remind them of who they are. Kiim lo yadu chashivus be'inei atzmam. Sometimes a person doesn't realize how much potential and how much capacity he has. Sometimes the person who recognizes that the least is the person themselves. Right? Oftentimes we see in other people their greatness. It's the person who has trouble seeing greatness in themselves. And therefore he says, K'derech ha-tzadikim b'chinas v'nachnu ma. People say, what am I? She'enim yodim ma'amheim umiheim. Most people don't understand how great they are, how great they could be. L'kach yomer lem, says the Munkacher Rav, therefore you have to tell them, She'emi yuchasim kadosh me'rechem. They are holy from the womb. You are different. You are kohanim. Lo lihi nasot ima yichus be'agvos mishpachto. Not so that they get arrogant and so they think they're better than everyone else. Rak li'inyan l'nefesh lo yitama. Sh'lo yifgom nafsho be'avera chalila. They have to expect more from themselves. When someone realizes who they are, when someone realizes what they're capable of, when someone realizes what's in their DNA, so they also realize that the bar is set really high from them. And therefore they raise the expectations of who they are and who they can become. If I really trace myself back to Aaron HaKohen, if I really have such unbelievable yichus, I don't want to be the one to ruin it. I have to live up to that expectation. I have to live up to that greatness. You know, we had a phrase in our home growing up. My father used to always say, always remember you're a Moskowitz. That's what he always used to say. Now, it wasn't for arrogant purposes. It was to say, like, we have a way of our expectation within our family, of the way we behave, of the way we speak, of the way we conduct yourselves. And he says, everywhere I want you to go, I want you to remember you're a Moskowitz. You carry with you that name, that Shem Tov, that has been built up over generations. You carry that with you. And you have to live up to those expectations and not fall short of them. That's what the Kohanim have to do as well. That's where he says, Emor el haKohanim b'nei Aaron. Tell the Kohanim, hey, you're not just anybody else. You're different. You have to expect more from yourselves. You have to raise the bar of who you can be. Now, of course, that's not limited just to the Kohanim. Who are we Jews, of course? We are a mamleches, Kohanim v'goy kadosh. We are a nation of priests. And if the Kohanim have to be reminded of their greatness and their yichus and who they come from and the potential they have, so too every single Yid, every single Jew. A Jew has to wake up in the morning and remember that they come from royalty. We are kings and queens and princes and princesses. We come from generations and generations of royalty. I had this year, Pesach. This was like one of the thoughts that was lingering in my head. I saw it in a sefer and it like really made an impression on me. If you think about when you sat down to eat the matzah, you do the math of how many generations going back of people who sat down in the exact same circumstance eating the same matzah. And it like really had an impression on me. Like I really felt that I was no longer Philip Moskowitz living in the year Tufshin Pehe in my own isolated Dalet Amos of the 120 years that I'm going to be on this earth. But I felt myself like connected to a continuum of the Jewish people. That I was eating, I was literally imbibing part of a Masorah that went back 2,000 years. And if that's the case, if I am inheriting that Masorah, then I don't want to be the one to mess it up. I don't want to be the one to ruin it. I got to be sure that I play my role as the link in the chain, bridging the previous generation with the future generation. That's my role. But that only starts when I realize that I'm part of something very special, that I'm not just an individual. I'm not just here one second, gone the next. But I'm part of a continuum of Jewish history that goes back 3,000 years to Avraham Avinu. That is an amazing achrayus. It's an amazing responsibility that every single one of us bears in the way we act, in the way we behave, in the way we dress, in the way we conduct ourselves. We carry the banner of Avraham Avinu to this very day. And therefore, says the Minkacher, now you understand the mission in Pirkei Avos. Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Chavivin Yisrael shenikru banu l'makom. How precious are you Jews that you are created and you are children of Hashem. But then the Mishnah says, Chiba Yisera, but even better than that is Nodat Lahem shenikru banu l'makom. More important than you realizing that you're royalty, more important than you being royalty is you realizing your royalty. And he says, Ki ben melech, kishe yodah ba'atzmo shu ben melech. When a prince knows that he's a prince, so shomer es atzmo karai. He's going to guard himself. He's going to watch himself. He's going to conduct himself in a proper way. You know, I had someone British over Shabbos, and we were talking about the monarchy and the king and the prince, the princess. I was making fun of it a little bit. He goes, no. He goes, I'm all in on the monarchy. And he was giving me all his reasons. And I told him, I said, the truth is, it actually serves a very important role. It reminds us of like what royalty could be. Now, obviously, we have to extrapolate it to Judaism, but it gives us a sense of like the reverence and of the way someone's supposed to conduct themselves and the way someone walks down the street with grace and with pride, right? We are royalty, he says, right? You Ben Melch, Shomer's Asmo Koroi, you have to watch yourself properly and you can't do everything that everybody else does and you can't behave the way everyone else does. Masha Inke, mean Eino Yodea, but if you don't know that, Shu Ben Melech, Mizalza Atzmo, Bisnagus, Kaven Kofer, then you can do anything, right? Because you have no expectations of yourself. And therefore, he says the Munkacher, now you understand the Pasuk. Emor el HaKohanim B'nei Aaron. Tell the Kohanim, you are B'nei Aaron. You are not just anybody. You are different. You were born different. You come from a different lineage. You come from a different heritage. You trace yourself back all the way to Avraham Avinu. Please, God Amir Tzim, when the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built, you're going to be in there. You're going to be sacrificing the korbanos. You're going to be the ones who are going to be responsible for the Kedusha of Am Yisrael. That's a responsibility that you bear. Not as a pressure, but as an achrayus of a bar that's set so high that you have to live up to, that you carry that rich lineage. And of course, because we are a Mamlechas Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, the responsibility of every single one of us as well to recognize that we are not just an individual, but we're part of Am Yisrael. We are flag bearers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. Everywhere we go, and every time we talk, and every time we behave, we are a reflection of Hashem. We are a Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. We are representing a tradition that goes back 3,000 years, and it is our job to represent that properly, and with the right dignity and the right respect, and to make sure that we translate that, and we transfer it to the next generation, so that our children, our grandchildren, appreciate the responsibility that comes with a Jew as well. So we saw three ideas. Three, I think, very different ideas. Idea number one was from Rav Avraham Izlachov, the Orach L'Chaim, the beautiful reading of the first part of the Pasuk, that you have to be involved with people, but you also have to maintain your own Kedusha. L'nefesh lo yitama be'amav, even though you're B'nai Aaron, and even though, therefore, you're Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Oev Esabrios, Mekarvel and Torah, you're going to be friends with everybody, with lots of different people, some who are like you, some who are different than you. And that's a beautiful thing, but you can never let that sacrifice your core values of what you are trying to build in terms of Kedusha. Idea number two is from Rostav. What is the idea of the blemishes? Why would we ever have the Havamina? That someone who would voluntarily bring a korban would also have a blemish. The answer is, is that unfortunately sometimes we make excuses, sometimes that initial inspiration dissipates, and sometimes we rationalize, Hashem doesn't really care, Hashem doesn't want me to spend this, Hashem doesn't notice my esrog. No. The same way we have an expectation of greatness in every other area of our life, we have to have it in spiritual pursuits as well. And idea number three comes from the Divi Yisrael, the Munkach Rav, and more El HaKohanim B'nei Aaron. Sometimes we need to remind ourselves of who we are in the people that we come from, in the people that we represent, in the lineage that we are the bearers of. And it's when Amor El HaKohanim B'nei Aaron, when we remind ourselves that we are princes and princesses, that we are children of royalty. So that means that we behave and we conduct ourselves in a certain way, recognizing our role in the transmission of the Mesorah. I wish everyone a good Shabbos.